Hello and welcome. Sitting in front of me at the moment, it's Bernice Wheeler, who deals with bereavement in the Cardiff and Vale Health Board. Is that the title to give you, Bernice?
Yeah.
We're going to spend some time talking about what happens with the bereavement process in the hospitals. And you've got a big territory to cover, haven't you?
Well, each individual health board has their own bereavement office. So I'm based at UHW. There's also a bereavement office here at Llandoch, and subsequently every health board has their own. But the process is the same across the board.
So you talk about the process. Yeah. Talk me through the process.
Okay. So we are the first point of contact for families when they've lost a relative and a loved one. We're able to offer advice and support and explain the process, which has recently changed from September with the implementation of the medical examiner service. So I'll explain what that entails. So every death now is scrutinised independently to the hospital. The medical examiner's service will speak with the family, they'll speak with doctors, and they will say when they're happy with everything.
One of the most difficult things as a result of these changes in procedures is it means a longer waiting time for funerals.
It does.
And families sometimes, you know, waiting a month, 6 weeks in some cases, before they can even bury their loved one, which makes the recovery from bereavement so difficult.
And that's what we try to avoid. You know, we try to implement this new process as quickly as we can. When a patient passes away on the ward, the doctor has up to 48 hours to notify the medical examiner's office with the proposed cause of death. The medical examiner then has to see sight of the medical records so that they can form their own independent review of the care of the patient and the events that led up to them passing away. They'll sometimes speak with the doctor if they've got further questions. They'll also speak with the family. And it's an opportunity for the families to raise any concerns that they've had and discuss the care if they've been unhappy with any aspects of care. So it, from our point of view, even though the process takes a little bit longer, ultimately the families are more supported.
And how long is it before you can go to a registrar and register the death in that case?
We try not to put a timescale on it because each bereavement is individual. Sometimes they'll need to go through the coroner's process if the death was unnatural or they've had surgery prior to them passing away. There's certain criteria that the medical examiners then will want referred to the coroner as well. So we try to manage the expectations of the bereaved. And we try to, keep them updated throughout the process because there's nothing worse than when you're just waiting and all you want is to move forward and, have your loved one in the care of the funeral directors where you can go and see them and you can, say goodbye properly. So it's, as I say, each case is different. So we try not to give definitive timelines for things. But at the moment, currently, where we are, the process is still bedding in. It's been since September. Nothing is ever straightforward. Things change as you go along and you adapt. Sort of where we are at the moment, just as an approximate, it's about 10 days.
How long does it take for a body then to be released to a funeral director?
So as soon as the family have been to the registrar's office, which is ultimately where they collect the actual cause of death certificate, they're also given a green certificate, which is like a release form that they hand to the funeral directors, and then the funeral directors can come and take them into their care.
So does that mean you've got a mortuary that is full sometimes with a lot of people.
Unfortunately, yes. But as I said, we do try to expedite things as quickly as possible. And again, you know, different times of the year, the winter pressures, we have more bereavements, you know, certain times of the year. So, yes, it's difficult to manage. And, of course, we've got Easter coming up. We've got a four-day weekend. And, you know, a lot depends on the rotation of doctors and whether they're on duty. They get ill themselves, mm-hmm. so sometimes they're not available. The one positive thing that's come out of the medical examiner's process, as well as the families feeling supported, is that prior to that, a cause of death certificate could only be completed by somebody that had seen the patient within the last 28 days, and now it's in life. Mm. So it opens up a broader spectrum of people that we can contact if, for instance, a doctor is, you know, is not in the... not on duty, not in the hospital.
You mentioned a little while ago about advice and guidance you give to people. Mm-hmm. What's the main types of advice and guidance you give?
So there's also a bereavement nurse within the hospital, and they sit under patient experience, and they offer care and support after death. They'll make phone calls to families. They'll do whatever they can. They can offer forms of counselling as well. Sort of from the bereavement office perspective, we're really there to offer guidance on process and how long things are going to take as an approximate. If somebody is particularly struggling, we can signpost them immediately to the bereavement nurse and her team as well. And we are very small teams. There's three people in the bereavement office in UHW. There's one here, Lucy, that I've been spending time with today, and the patient experience team is Helen, Faye and Jessica, and they make phone calls to families after there's been a bereavement, just to make themselves known and if there's anything that they can do to help and support.
How often is it that people come back to you 6 months later and say thank you very much?
We do get feedback. There's Faye and her team will send out questionnaires that the families can provide feedback on the service that they've received. So occasionally we get, you know.
But not everybody fills in survey
because life
is full of surveys these days.
Yeah. For the most part, people are very grateful when you speak to them on the telephone. People handle grief very differently, so no two conversations are the same. But most people are grateful.
What about financial aspects when somebody says, well, we can't afford a funeral?
No. So there's lots of support out there. The DWP website has a bereavement section. So if the person that's passed away was in receipt of any benefits, or the person that's left was in receipt of any benefits, they can apply for a grant or a loan. There's also a Cardiff City funeral. Have you heard of that before?
I think I have.
Okay, so there's a Cardiff City funeral which is subsidised by the council, and the funeral directors. It goes out to tender, so the funeral directors can sort of.
So it's what we call, has been called, a pauper's funeral?
No, that doesn't exist anymore, and I don't like to refer to it as that.
Yeah.
So a Cardiff City funeral is something that every resident of Cardiff is entitled to, and it's subsidised, as I say, by the council. And the funeral directors that have that at the moment are based in Penarth. So it's one price for burial, one price for cremation. It is a very basic funeral, but I wouldn't class it as a pauper's funeral.
And of course, TV is full of adverts for the pure cremation procedures and all that, all that sort of thing these days,
I mean, personally, I used the Cardiff City funeral service when my dad passed away.
Yeah.
And it was, you it was just the same as any other funeral I've ever been to. As we know, funeral directors' fees are quite expensive. So
Something we never expect to happen to us, but it's the one thing we do know is going to happen to us.
Yeah. We have cases where there is no family. Somebody's outlived their family and they're elderly. They perhaps haven't made any provision for a funeral. So it's my role then in the team to arrange a hospital funeral. And I think that's what you referred to when you referred to the pauper's funeral.
Yeah.
So we have a contract funeral director that I liaise with. And then I'll make all the arrangements for them. It is usually a direct cremation or a direct burial. Sometimes there's a small graveside service if anybody wants to attend. And I can make provision for ashes to be scattered in one of the gardens of remembrance. So it's quite an interesting side to the job and something that I enjoy doing, because even though I've never met that person and I've never met any of their family previously, I feel quite honoured to be able to do that for somebody. Mm-hmm. It's like the last thing that you can do for somebody. So.
Yeah, because when you mentioned a Cardiff City funeral, of course, Cardiff City have got a wonderful memorial garden down on Sloper Road, which I've been down there because a friend has got his ashes scattered there, and it is wonderful what the football club has provided down there.
And I think that people are afraid to ask for help to funeral directors. Most funeral directors, if you make them aware that you're struggling financially, they will do whatever they can to help. They also can offer advice. Some funeral directors are very competitive to the contract, the Cardiff City funeral contract. So, you know, don't be afraid to ask. It's a lot of money, and I think we're very vulnerable when we've lost somebody.
Yeah.
And we feel that it's not the right place then to get a good deal then, you know.
What is the biggest problem in your job, would you say?
The biggest problem is the final part, actually getting the paperwork completed. We are very tied to the doctors and how busy they are on the wards. And sometimes contacting them is very difficult. But when we're trying to do everything we can in the process that we have to follow, it can be a little bit frustrating when you're relying on other people to meet that criteria also.
I mean, this area of the country is what you would call very multiracial. And obviously, with the different religions that exist, does that cause any problems for you?
We always do our best to help the faith community when they've had a bereavement. We appreciate their customs and that they need to, you know, bury their loved ones within 24 hours. So there is a process within the medical examiner's notification that the doctor can notify them that it is a faith death, and we will look at it as, you know, more quickly. Again, if the death was unnatural or it needs to go to the coroner, that's out of our hands, that's out of the medical examiner's hands. The coroner has jurisdiction over that. But we do endeavour, and so do the other parties, the medical examiner, the coroners. We still try to keep it to a very limited amount of time for them.
Well, in this day and age when people talk about NHS cuts, based on what you've told me, Bernice, there's no way your job should ever be cut, because it is a life and death job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wish there were more of us. You know, it's we struggle to provide the service that we do. It would be better if there were more of us, but hey ho.
Yeah, but what you are doing, I think it's fair to say, is a very, very important job that nobody else would want to do.
No,
and that's the key to the service that you provide. And no doubt anybody listening to us at the moment who has used your services will say thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
And thank you.